Okay, so we're moving on in our Midrash class, and today we're going to be looking at Rivka. So last time, I don't even remember what the last subject was. Last time we talked about the death of Sarah and the eulogy over Sarah. It's over there. Okay, the eulogy for Sarah, and now after the death of Sarah, the next thing that happened was that Abraham sent his servant, who is described in every Midrashic work and in the Gemara as being Eliezer. The Torah only one time names him, and that's at the Brisbane Habasarium, which we've talked about, which is chapter 15 in Bereishis. Anyway, he sends him to find a wife, and he brings back the wife that we all know and love, and that is Rivka. And one of the things which we noted at the time of the death of Sarah was the proximity of the Akedah, the binding of Yitzchak, and the birth of Rivka, which is mentioned right after the binding of Yitzchak in chapter 22, and then the death of Sarah, which is the beginning of chapter 23. And because those three events are recorded right next to each other in the Torah, so there are some who are of the view that they all happen at the same time. And since we know how old Sarah was at the time of her death, which is 127, and we know that she was 90 when Yitzchak was born, so do the math on Yitzchak's age, 37, and that was one view. We saw other views when we were looking at the Akedah. And Rivka's birth being put at that time, that indicates that Rivka was born when Yitzchak was 37, and therefore when Yitzchak gets married, if you look on page 124 in the Chumash, which is where most of Rivka's story is, other than when she gets the water from the well, which we're not really going to be looking at today. We'll touch upon it very, very little. But we see the beginning of Parshas Toldos, Ve'ela Toldos, Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham Alidus Yitzchak. So we're given that introduction. This is not a class on Parshas Toldos, so we're not even touching that. Next Pasuk, Vayihi Yitzchak ben Arba'im Shana B'kach Tos Rivka. So we're given a timestamp on Yitzchak's life, that he is 40 when he takes Rivka, Bas Bisuel, Aramimi Padan Aram, Achos Lavan Arami Lelisha. Takes Rivka, who's the daughter of Bisuel, and the brother of Lavan. Okay? And so that's our background. And a couple more psukim about Rivka that we should just be aware of, because this also plays into our topic today about Rivka's pregnancy, is Pasuk Chaf Aleph, 21, by Yatar Yitzchak L'Hashem Menochach Ishto Ki Akarahi. Yitzchak, Ayin Taf Reish, is one form of prayer. Okay, we see this also with Paro when he tells Moshe on a couple times, several occasions, he says, Ha'atiru ba'adi. Okay, now there are other words which are for prayer, and what that word means is a subject of a different discussion about the different forms of prayer, so I don't want to get into that. Ki akarahi, because she was barren. Vayi'asar lo Hashem atar Rivka ishto. So it's funny how Yitzchak is vayi'atar and vayi'asar lo Hashem, like God kind of does that back then, which is fascinating to see what that means. Do they mean the same thing, by the way? One is Yitzchak's verb and one is God's verb, so interesting. Anyway, so when she's pregnant, the sons that are in her, now by the way, when the Torah tells us that the banim that are in her are misrotzim, whatever that means, they're struggling. So it's telling us something that we know now, but she doesn't know. Vatomer im kein lama ze anochi, and she says, im kein lama ze anochi. Okay, which is typically translated to mean, if so, why this me? This is a strange language. Okay, I think it was it's not good grammar, that's for sure. But of course, you know, that would not be the best translation. I mean, our scroll says, if so, why am I thus? What does that mean? Okay, I think it was in the Aksava Kabbalah that he says that im does not mean if over here, which is a fascinating viewpoint. But anyway, Vatelech Ledroshus Hashem, so she goes to seek out God. Okay, now what that means, you know, Rashi says that she goes to ask a question of a person who is a prophet. Okay, that's one approach. As we'll see, there's another view that she actually went to the place where Yitzchak... Yeah, right, but that's the idea. That another view is that she went to the place where Yitzchak was brought as a sacrifice, that she went to Har Moriah, because that's the place where you go to seek out God. Okay, and Vayomer Hashem La, and Hashem actually said to her, Shnei goyim v'vanech. Okay, now there are different interpretations as to what that means. It literally means that God is talking to her, which would mean that Rivka is a prophet, right? Okay. Another view is that she got that through a person. Okay, different possibilities. And she's told Shnei goyim v'vanech. You have two goyim. Shnei le'umim me'ayach paredu, and two nations. Is that actually what le'um means, right? And is a le'um the same as an ummah? Okay? These are just important questions to ask when you're studying Chumash, just to understand what we're reading. Ula'om mil'om ye'ematz, okay, v'rab ye'avod sa'ir. The might shall pass from one regime to the other. Okay, so that does not... I mean, when you say le'om is referring to... or le'om, again, the words are subject to further study. V'rab ye'avod sa'ir, and the elder will serve the younger. Yeah.
Modern Hebrew parlance, so le'um is international, so mean that
right.
The relationship.
So I'll tell you that last my Parsha class last year we used the Haksavah Kabbalah and I don't remember what he says, but I do remember that what he says is fascinating because he addresses the different meanings of these words and he just doesn't take it all for like, oh yeah, let's look at what article translates it.
Yeah, okay. But I'm saying and the fact that people who came up with the definitions in modern Hebrew
right.
knew Medrash.
Right.
They knew
okay.
Correct. The relation between Yaakov and Esau.
The last thing which we need to see now is the next pasuk. Okay, she gives birth, and there are somim. Now, again, that's another word which is questionable. What does somim mean? Right. We have what. Right, like. So, but notice how you said like twins.
Right.
What is twins? Tumim with an aleph. You don't have the aleph here, so what does that mean? Okay, and that's it's funny because Yaakov later on in a little bit is going to be described as the Yaakov Ish Tam. Okay, my point is that all these are flags, and you can't just say, oh, what does this mean? Okay, let me look at art school. This is not a knock on art school. I've mentioned this before. Every translation is a commentary. It has to make a choice. And so therefore, in terms of just explaining what a word means. So once you do that, when her term to bear grew full, then behold, there were twins in her womb. Okay, and most of the commentaries say that tomim means tumim and it means twins. And there's a reason why the aleph is missing, which we're going to see as well. Okay.
Could you just tell us why? Because it's connected to Tom? Or
no? I'm throwing out bits.
Okay.
Okay, I'm not... There's no way in the world that with every single thing here could be a shiur in itself for an hour. Okay, and that's the beauty of Chumash. That's why rabbis have a job. Thank God. Okay. So, the first two questions that I want to look at are how old was Rivka at her wedding? That's the first question. And the second one is what's going on in this pregnancy? Okay, so now that we've looked at it in the Chumash, we can really ask the question a little more clearly. Now, I think I laid out before the viewpoint that says that Rivka was three at the time of her wedding. Okay, because if she was born when Yitzchak was 37, then and he gets married at 40, then fine. Now I like the face that you're making. Okay, it's hard. It's hard. It's hard. Okay. Now, of course, if whether you were at the Akedah class or not at the Akedah class, you should know that there are other views as to how old Yitzchak was at the Akedah, which opens the door to two possibilities. One, if another view on Yitzchak's age is correct, okay, then another view on Rivka's age has to be possible, okay? And that's number one. And number two, even if Yitzchak's age at the Akedah is 37, the fact that Abraham hears about Rivka's birth at the time of the Akedah does not mean that she was just born.
Necessarily.
Right. We could throw that, that's an important word, does not necessarily mean that she was just born. Okay, so if, for example, you look at Rashi here, you'll see that he gives this whole thing where he explains how Rivka is three. So look, it's in the right column, and it's about halfway down, one or two lines below the halfway down line. There's a period, four words from the end of the line, okay? Where he explains how Yitzchak is 37, and he says, Uvo baperek, nolda Rivka, and at that time Rivka was born, himtin lash teruya labia gimel shanim v'nisa'a. So that's also something which we might find troubling, that he waited for her to be worthy of having marital relations at three, and he married her. Now, you have to understand what that means. Okay, the Gemara, when it talks about it, and you see how it says Nida Memdalit, talks about how if a girl's hymen is ruptured prior to age three, she's still considered to be a virgin. If her hymen is ruptured afterwards, she's not considered to be a virgin. Now, this does not mean that it is appropriate or warranted to have marital relations with a three-year-old. And that's one of the reasons why, as we're going to see as well, there's a 20-year gap between when they get married and when she has a child, because a viewpoint is that for 10 years, until she was a teenager, he didn't touch her in that way, because that would have been not just highly inappropriate, that would have been criminal. Okay, so that, again, but that assumes that she was three at the time of their marriage. Now, infertility for 10 years is still a problem. 20 years, certainly a problem. But it's not something we haven't seen before. We saw it with Sarah. And nobody's questioning how old she was when she got married to Abraham. We know that they were 10 years apart, and that they're married a good many years, over 20 years at least, by the time she has Yitzchak. So that's not the question. But look at what I wanted to point out to you is the source that is quoted here by Rashi. Now, I don't know if Rashi wrote this parenthetical comment or if this was put in later, but look at where he says he gets this idea from. Seder Olam. Okay? And he also says to look at Yalkut Shimoni, Kuf Yud, Yevamo Samach Aleph Amud Beis, Tosus Dibram Aschil Ein, Sof Meseches Sofrim. Now I didn't give you Sof Meseches Sofrim, but I did give you Seder Olam, the Sifrei, and Tosus and Yevamos. Okay? And that's what we're going to look at first and foremost. So take a look at the page, which you have. The first thing you see in Seder Olam. Now, I like to do the English in the interest of time, but just so you see that I'm not making this stuff up. Okay, look at the Hebrew. And look what it does. It gives us two options. One in parentheses and one in brackets. Yudalid. What's Yudalid? 14. Okay, and the other one is Gimel. 3, Shana. So that's what I gave you in the English. That chapter was born with Yitzchak, married Rivka when she was 14 or 3. Well, which one? Okay, which one? Take a look at the Sifrei. This is important. And I'm not such a genius that I found the Sifrei, but the Tosus we're about to see mentions the Sifrei, and that's why it's important to know it beforehand. Okay, the Sifrei is a Midrash on Devarim. It says the following. Sheish Zugos, Shesh Nosei and Shavos, there were six pairs of people who were the same age. Rivka and Kahas, Levi and Amram, Joseph and Joshua, Samuel and Solomon, Moses and Hillel, Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Akiva. Okay? So, Yosef and Yoshua, for example, lived to be 110. Shmuel and Shlomo, they both lived to be 52. Levi and Amram both lived to be 137. Moshe and Hillel, 120. Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Akiva, our tradition is also that Rabbi Akiva was 120. I don't remember, so I'm assuming that that's the case.
You to do it one more time.
Oh, I mean, the numbers aren't so important, but I'll tell you them again. Okay. I left out Rivka and Kahas because I want to show you Kahas in the pasuk. Levi and Amram are 137. We're going to see those numbers in the same place where we're going to see Kahas. Joseph and Joshua are 110. Samuel and Solomon 52. Moshe and Hillel 120. And again, I don't remember for Rabbi Yochanan, but I know that the tradition about Rabbi Akiva is that he was 120. So why they need to be a separate zug, a separate pair? Okay, I don't know the answer to that, but anyway, so let's take a look just for a second. Turn to page 322 in the Chumash. Okay, in the beginning of Parshas Va'era, we have an interesting interlude or very significant list of genealogy, and that is giving us the family of Reuven in very brief, the family of Shimon in very brief, and then the family of Levi in much detail. And the whole point of that family of Levi listing is to show us who Moshe and Aaron are and why they are the ones who are sent to Paro to lead the Bnei Israel and to be those who take the Bnei Israel out of Egypt. So on the bottom of page 320, you're going to see the years of Levi. It's the second to last line of the Hebrew. Ushnei chayei Levi, sheva u'shloshim yashana. So there I mentioned that we're going to see that. That's 137. Take a look at the top of the next page, 322. Ushnei chayei kahas, shalosh u'shloshim yashana. 133, the years of kahas. If you skip a couple of lines, you're going to see Shnei Chaye Amram, Sheva Ushloshim Yashana. Amram lived 137. And that's one of the pairs that the Sifrei mentioned, that Amram and Levi both lived to be the same number of years, and that's what the Pasuk tells us. They both lived to be 137. What's the number of years that we saw for Kahas? 133. And what did the Sifrei say? That Kahas lived the same number of years as Rivka. Okay? So that's it. So what is that? What do we take from there? That Rivka lived to be 133. Okay? Any reason to doubt that? Any reason to question that? I mean, you can question anything you want, but that's the Sifrei. That's the idea that that's
is
the idea that he has.
Source for that?
What?
Is that a source for the comparison of years?
Is there a source for the idea mentioned in the Sifrei? I would tell you that the source is a Sifrei. I don't know about the source. The Sifrei is pretty, you know, pretty big gun. Okay, in the scheme of things. Okay, I don't know where the Sifrei gets it from. Okay, I don't know. All right. So now, with that background, we need to look at the Tosfos. And in the interest of time, for those who can make your way through the Hebrew, you can do that. We're going to read through the English. This is my translation, so any errors in it are mine. But this is what we have. It says here the girl is very beautiful. It's a wonder. It's a wonder. Tema. Because here it implies that Rivka was a maiden at least 12, whereas in Seder Olam it says she was 3 when she married Yitzchak. Even though in the version of Seder Olam that I gave you, it brings two possibilities. Okay, and it's hard to reconcile. But we learned that Yitzchak was 37 at the time of the Akedah, and in that chapter Rivka was born. And then it says Yitzchak was 40 when he got married, which implies that Rivka was 3. Rabbi Shmuel Chassid of Spire proved that she was 14 from the Sifrei, who said that 6 pairs were the same age pairing Rivka with Kahat, and Kahat lived to be 133, as it says in the Torah. And if she was 14 when she married, the calculations work out. When Yaakov was born, she was 34, right? Because that would mean that she got married at 14, 20 years later, she gives birth to Yaakov and Esav, and she is 34. So now, do the math. How old is she? How old is Yaakov, rather, when she dies? If she's 133 when she dies, if she's 34, no, if she's 34 when she gives birth to him, and she dies at 133, how many years pass from that time? 99. Yaakov has to be 99. Is Yaakov 99 when she dies? The answer is yes, very much so. It's actually very clear. Yaakov was 99 when she died, which makes her 133. When Yaakov received the blessing, he was 63. Now, this is a whole discussion, by the way, in the Gemara Megillah. And it's straight in the Gemara, by the way. Yeah. So I don't have to even quote for you Tosfos there, or Rashi there. It's straight in the Gemara. There is a Rashi. Rashi gives this entire cheshbon, for example, at the time of the death of Yitzchak in Parshas Vayishlach, when Yitzchak's death is recorded, even though Yitzchak really only dies a year before Yosef gets out of the pit, gets out of the jail, rather, in Egypt. A year before Yitzchak dies, a year before Yosef becomes the viceroy in Egypt. But his death is recorded in Parshas Vayishlach because his story ends in Parshas Vayishlach. Okay?
So Rivka's age is recorded in the, when she died?
No, Rivka's age is not recorded.
So
based on the Sifrei. Oh, no, Rivka's death is somewhat recorded. It's hinted to with the death of Devorah, okay, the Menekes Rivka. Rivka is made on account of the death of the Menekes Rivka. Our understanding is that Rivka died. Okay, she came to tell Yaakov that Rivka had died, and that's why she was there, and she too died. And the explanation for why Rivka's death is hidden in the Torah was because Yaakov was not present, and the only person following her coffin was Esav. So the Torah didn't want to make a big deal about that because it was embarrassing.
And it's also, as you mentioned, in your sources, they mentioned Avon Bachut, that
because so when Yaakov received the blessing of 63, which is at the same time that Yishmael died, Yishmael lived to be 137, he had been 74 when Yaakov was born. Yaakov spent 14 years in the house of Aver, 20 years in Laban's home, and 2 years on the road until his return and his mother's death. We know when his mother died, from the teaching of Avon Bachut, 2 crimes for Rivka and for her nurse, obviously the Midrashim conflict with one another. And by the way, just do not think of that from our language. With Sarech Lomar, the Midrashas Chalukim Zelze. Okay? That's what the Tosfos he concludes. Now, what do you do with a conflicting midrash like this? Well, what you say is, I don't know. That's what you say. You can ask yourself, which is more compelling. Years ago, I write a weekly Dvar Torah, and I wrote an article which was picked up, and my tone was probably a little edgy. But I said, you know, you've been learning Chumash your whole life, and you still think that Rivka is three because Rashi said so. Well, here's Tosfos, okay, who says no. So open your eyes. That was basically my message. It was probably a little harsher tone than that. So I got hammered on the internet by some people who, you know, thought I was a Reform rabbi for that. You know, but I mean, you know, if you open your eyes a little bit, you see something, and this is not a crazy view, right? I mean, even in the Seder Olam, who's the source, brings two different brackets. I mean, you know, which is more authoritative, a parenthesis or a bracket? I don't know. And the point is just that we have to open our eyes and not accept a viewpoint as dogma simply because of who said it. Okay, now, is Rashi right or wrong? I don't know. Is Tosfos right or wrong? I don't know. But I certainly view the mathematical calculation that Tosfos gives to be more compelling in light of this afraid.
Isn't it a better view for us to accept because normal
stuff? So, right. So, we can certainly, to the modern eye, that is certainly an easier argument. To the ancient eye, I think I mentioned this sometime as well. Well, actually, no, it wasn't in this class. But one of the points which is difficult, and it's also discussed in Talmud, is regarding the ages of Yehuda's children and grandchildren, Peretz and Zerach, and the fact that Peretz is a grandfather by the time they come. That Peretz is a father by the time they come down to Egypt, which is very difficult. Okay, they have to be very young. So once you look at things that way, then the possibility of Rivka being three at the time of her marriage isn't crazy, but you know. But again, which one do you prefer? Okay, and it's not a question of do you like Rashi or do you not like Rashi. That's the wrong attitude. The question is which analysis do you prefer? And in the end of the day, we don't know the answer. Okay, and I don't know that we'll ever know the answer because. Like Jerry was saying, where did the Sifrei get this from? I don't know. Okay, so that the whole point of that discussion is just to show you that it's not simple. Okay, and just to say one way, because you saw one way in a commentary. Again, I'm not knocking the commentary, but where did the commentary get it from? He told us to go to Seder Olam. So we went to Seder Olam. And what did Seder Olam tell us? Seder Olam told us, no, two possibilities. And through a further analysis, you come up with another approach. Okay, and that's really all that I'm trying to say. I'm not trying to pick a side here. I could tell you what my gut finds more appealing. Okay, but there are plenty of people whose gut says no. You know, the other way is fine, and I don't have a problem with it at all. Okay, so we'll leave that for what it is.
How do we view numbers?
Right, so right, that's a different question about the hashkafa of the Torah in general. Right, there, I've heard some people make the argument that numbers in the Torah, for example, the ages of people prior to the flood and through the generation, you know, all the way until Abraham and even the Avos, are exaggerated. I don't know what to make of that. Okay, I mean, you know, so what? God told Abraham 400 years and he didn't really mean 400 years. Is it an exaggeration? Is that what that means? It was an exaggeration? We know, following a timeline that we have, that they're in Egypt for 210 years. So then somebody's going to say, oh, Moshe wasn't really 80 when he got to in front of Paro. Moshe wasn't really 120. So he's saying that they weren't really in the desert for 40. You know, once you start opening that can of worms, then you're opening up a lot of cans of worms. And cans of worms, which really throw everything into question. So I prefer to look at the year numbers as being what they are. And to not you know wonder about the possibilities. I mean, just as I mentioned the Aksav HaKabbalah before, I think it was his explanation. He said that the flood totally changed the world in terms of the atmosphere and in terms of just whatever was around. And so the possibility and the ability to live that long, it disappeared after the flood. Now, if you say the flood is like, it's the epic of Gilgamesh, it's not real, okay, then there's really nothing to talk about, because we're dealing with a different set of assumptions and a different belief system. Okay, and with regard to the concept of creation, that's actually a big discussion regarding what does Yom Echad mean. So that's a very different conversation than a chronology of years, because we're dealing in a time where there's a little bit of chaos, and the world is not exactly in order and put in place. And there's something called Gan Eden, and what does Gan Eden mean? And what does the entire first book, Parsha of Bereishis, mean? So that's a different discussion than when you get into the real world, and the real world, in other words, a non-Gan Eden kind of existence, and then you have a flood, and then things change, and we see how there's a, I don't want to call it a fall of man, but how man deteriorates. And how just the idea of the world changes. And even in the time of the flood, God says, on account of what's taking place, the years of man will be 120. In other words, it's going to take a little bit of time until we get there, but eventually we're going to get there. And when we get there, that's it. And so when we look at Rabbi Akiva, for example, so he's 120. You know, what does that mean? Was that an exaggeration? There are different views about Rabbi Akiva. And I've seen legitimate articles from legitimate people saying, if Rabbi Akiva lived to be 120, and since he was around at the time of Bar Kokhba, then he was born at such and such time. But if the 120 years is a little inaccurate, then Rabbi Akiva was born a little later, and therefore. But that's different, because that's a Talmudic period, and maybe those numbers are, you know, played with a little bit. Rabbi Akiva had 12,000 pairs of students. Okay, it's one view. There's another view that I found, a very legitimate source, that said Rabbi Akiva had 300 students.
Maybe after the...
No, the number of students Rabbi Akiva had after everything was, again, five. There are different midrashic texts and Talmudic texts, five, six, seven. Okay, there are different opinions as to what that is. But again, the idea of it being 12,000 pairs, that's a pretty impressive number. Okay, it's hard to swallow it, but hey, anything's possible, right? Okay, whereas the number 300 of people following around where he walks, I can see that. I can't see him in a pre-microphone age walking around with 24,000 people following him wherever he goes. It's hard to imagine in that way. Whatever. Anyway, I don't want to get lost in that. Yeah.
Is there any deeper meaning or symbolic meaning to whether she was 3 versus 14?
So the only thing that I'll respond to that is that there is a view that Abraham was 3 when he discovered God. And that seems to be interesting, right? There's a commonality there. And so maybe there's a deep message about somebody being 3 and being able to achieve something extraordinary. You know, I mean, there's what to be taken from it. But when we're talking about what was the literal truth of these people, the answer is, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. Okay, right, that's a different... Okay. All right, let's continue on this on the Midrash page here. Okay? Now the next thing actually presumes to go back. This is the Midrash Haggadah, which says that when Eliezer, I'm just going to call him Eliezer for ease, even though the Torah doesn't give him a name in the story with when he finds Rivka, but when Eliezer goes over to his parents, to Rivka's parents, rather, and says to them, can I take the girl back to marry my master's son? They say, Nikra Lana'ara. Okay, we're going to call the young lady. Now, first of all, what does Na'ara mean? Halachically, a Na'ara is somebody who's at least, no, it's usually somebody who's at least 12. Okay, that's in halachic sense, certainly Talmudically, that's what Na'ara is. Now, does that mean that there isn't a little bit of fluidity in the possibility? No, there is. There is. Somebody who's a Na'ar is not always a boy who's 13. Okay, there we have that. When Moshe is in the basket, and the daughter of Paro opens up the basket, the pasuk says that vihine na'ar boche, that there was a na'ar crying. Okay, and there are two possibilities of who the na'ar is. It might be the baby, who's certainly not a na'ar. Okay, he's a baby, 3 months old, that's what we have. Another possibility is that, you know how Miriam was watching? That Aaron was also watching, and that he was crying. But how many years apart are Moshe and Aaron?
3.
So if he's the na'ar, so, you know, to say that a na'ar means a 3-year-old is not crazy or far-fetched. But look what the Midrash says. It's written ksiv lenar lenara chaser hay, that it's minus a hay. A na'ara, a girl who's that age, is one thing, but why is it chaser hay lefisha hoisa bogeris? You know what a bogeris is? A bogeris is a girl who's over 12 and a half. Right? Matured, physically matured. So, now, that's halachically speaking. If a person is going to argue that Rivka, as a three-year-old, was physically mature, so I mean, I simply don't know. Okay, I don't know what people were like that. I don't know what their food was like. I don't know, right? In other words, the evidence regarding Yehuda's children becoming fathers at a young age is pretty clear. So that would indicate that things maybe could have happened at an earlier age for boys, girls, whatever. Okay, but, and so therefore, what does Bogeris mean? But if we look at our strict understanding of the word Bogeris now, it's an age, even in the time of the Talmud, and it's an age above 12 and a half. Okay, now, does that mean that girls younger than 12 can't give birth? I just read a story in a newspaper yesterday about an 11-year-old who had a baby, okay, and there's a 12-year-old who's or a 13-year-old who's the father. And then, I don't remember where it was. Maybe it was Australia, I'm not sure. Someplace, and they're thinking about prosecuting, but like they're both kids, you know. Whatever they did, and we all know how these things work, but you know, she's a little girl, right? It's a crazy story, but obviously if this happened, an 11-year-old nowadays can give birth. Okay?
There are cases in the medical literature of early maturity.
Right.
At 3 to 5 years old.
Okay.
Documented, so it happens.
Right.
Both men and women.
Right. Okay. So it's certainly possible. Does that mean that Rivka is weird? It's a different time. So the possibilities, yes. What we take from it. Okay. A few midrashic details about Rivka. So we saw that Rivka in the pasuk. We saw that Rivka is walking around. Is saying lama ze anochi. Basically, why this me? What do I need? Why me? What do I need this for? So let's take a look here on the bottom of the page. Okay. So we should know, first of all, the first thing talks about, maybe some of you are familiar with this idea, that when Eliezer met her, so the water came up to meet her. That was the first, and that was the first indicator to him that she was something special. And of course, the Midrash Rabbah, Samach, number Hey, quotes that that this is a source for the idea Oz Yashir Yisrael Sashira Azos Aliba Er, that when the well brings up water, brings forth water, that is a giving homage to the Ima Rivka, right, the mother, our mother Rivka, who is the first to bring forth water from a Be'er, okay, from a well. That's item number one. Next thing, remember that Eliezer on the very bottom of the page, Eliezer gives her some gifts. Shnei tzividim al yadeh, which is keneged shnei luchos, asar zav mishkalam keneged asar sadibros. That he gave her two bracelets, which are reminiscent of the two tablets, and they weighed 10 gold, whatever weight that was, which is reminiscent of the asar sadibros, the Ten Commandments, just to show who she was, what she was, and what she's going to stand for to represent. Okay? Skip to the next thing on the top of the page, Yud Beis, where we're told that, again, these are just stuff about Rivka, parenthetical to everything which we're looking at, where the Midrash tells us a few things about her, that there's an assumption made that Besuel, because he disappears from the story, that her father disappears from the story, that he died. And so when he had died, and what that whole story is another tale in the Midrash about trying to kill Eliezer. Anyway, so that her mother and brother ask for her to stay with us for Yamim. If you look on the line where it says Yamim, right before the bold, Elu Shiva Simei Evlo. So that they were asking for her to stay for a few days for Shiva, because they were very frum about keeping halacha. So they wanted her to sit Shiva with them. O Asor or Asor. What does Asor mean? So that's a good question. The Midrash here says, Elu Yud Beis Chodesh, that they wanted to give her 12 months. That Asor meant basically a year. that she should stay for a year, because that's the amount of time that you give, shenosnun lebesula farnes hasatzma, the amount of time that you give to a virgin to basically build up her own equity before she gets married. And then when they asked her, Yomer Nigrela Nara, we're going to ask the young girl, Mikan she'en v'sina say soma el alpiyas, and that is a source for an idea that you don't marry off an orphan girl without her agreeing, without her permission. Okay, so that's just some background information about Rivka, separate from everything else, and good to know. The next paragraph here talks about how when Yitzchak brought her to the house, a few things which came back from when Sarah had been around. I'm sure some of you are familiar with three of these, because I don't know why, because I know Rashi quotes three of them, but there are four here actually. One is Anan. I'm just going to skip from the parts which are in bold. Anan kashur al pesach ohala, that there was a cloud hovering over the opening of the tent. The second one is dalsos psuchos arvacha, that the doors were always open for, what's ravacha? Ravacha means like wealth, success, that things, just good things happen there. The next one is bracha mishulachas ba'isa, that there was a blessing in the dough, that the dough was always fresh, or that the bread was fresh from week to week. And the last one is ner dolek milele Shabbos ad lele Shabbos, that there was a candle lit from, you know, for an entire week. They went to Glick's, they bought a 7-day candle, and well, or they had the Hanukkah miracle week to week. Okay, that the 1-day candle lasted 7. Yeah, amazing. Okay, but anyway, that's the tradition that they have, and so that when Rivka came, she brought all that stuff back, and that's how Yitzchak knew that she was the real deal. Okay, so now we get to the Midrash Bereishis Rabbah, and I'll tell you that I took Bereishis Rabbah for ease, but there are a number of Midrashim which talk about this. For example, I have here, let me see, Vav. Okay, so just skip to the bottom one for a second. I want you to see this. Vayimleu yamel aledes lahalan chaserim v'kan mele'im. Lahalan ksiv te'omim peretz v'zerach shneim tzadikim. So it says that here, it says that they were, peretz and zerach, I'm sorry, when peretz and zerach, who were born to Tamar, later on, when it says they were born, it says te'omim with an aleph. V'kan tomim, it says without an aleph. The difference is that peretz and zerach were both tzadikim, righteous, and Yaakov and Esav, one was a tzaddik and one was a rasha. And so the point is that calling them somim without the aleph shows you that there's something missing in this set of twins. That's an answer. It's an explanation. Is it the only answer? The only explanation? No. As I mentioned, that tomim might have other meanings as well, but that, in terms of translating tomim as tumim, as twins, that is an answer. Okay? Okay, other thoughts. Take a look in Zion. So I skipped a little bit here, but I just want to tell you one thing. Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon says, I didn't put that on the page here, but he says, "Me'olam lo nizkaka kadosh baruch hu lasiachem isha elim osa tzadekes." Says God never spoke directly with a woman, except for this righteous woman. Okay, now he says, "Ve'afi al yidei ilah." I don't know. I'm not sure what that means. Was it through a medium, meaning a middleman? And that's the debate. Whether she spoke. Was it through Shem? Was it through Aver, who was still alive, etc.? Al Yidei Shem Ben Noach. It's one of the points which he mentions here, which I gave you. And now let's take a look at the second line there in Zion. Shnei goyim bevitnech. Shnei giyei goyim bevitnech. Zem is gai be'elamo, zem is gai be'malchuso. That they're goyim. If you'll notice, is a kriyuk siv. You know what goyim means? Nations. But the way that it is written, if you go back into the pasuk, it's written gimel yud yud mem, which is not the way you spell the word goyim. Goyim meaning nations. Okay, and so he says that there's two kinds of pride here. Shnei giyei goyim. One has a pride misgaeba olamo in his world, and one has a pride misgaeba malchuso in his kingdom or in his kingship. He gives two other examples of two kinds of nations in your belly, in your womb. One is Adrianus, and Shlomo be Israel, the great kings. One was of the nations, and one was of Israel. Okay, and the other interpretation is Shnei Sonei Goyim Bivitnech. There are two haters of the Goyim in your inside of you. Kala of Dei Kochavim, Sonim is Esav. I'm not sure what this means, honestly. That all the stargazers, all the idol worshippers in the world, they hate Esav. Kala of Dei Kochavim, Sonim is Israel. They also hate Israel. So, and I don't completely understand that. But I want to look at the next one, or the previous one, in which it goes through a few other choice information about Rivka. Okay? So one thing which I think people are familiar with, because Rashi mentions it, is start with line 4. Not the part which is in bold, but line 4. Okay? I'm right over here, for those who are following along. Line 4, in the middle of the line. That when she would pass by, Batei Knesios means houses of gathering. Nowadays we would say when she would pass by shuls and base medrashes. What's the problem? What's the problem in Rivka's time? How many shuls and base medrashes were there? Okay, right. Maybe there was one called Shem and Aver. Okay, but that's the base medrash. Right. And there had to be a third because there's one that neither of them go into. Of course. Of course. Okay. Okay. So that's one idea that when she would pass that, and you look go to the next line in the middle of the line, when she would pass by house of idolatry, Esav ratzum farches. Let's say Esav was trying to go out. So she says, what do I need this for? Rabbi Yitzchak Amar, now at the part which is in bold. Rabbi Yitzchak Amar Melamed Shaisa Yimenu Rivka Machzeres Al Pischeyen Shel Nashim. It's teaching us that Rivka was going over to all the women that she knew. Right? Remember, Rivka's been married 20 years, okay? Never been pregnant before. So what happens is, you know, I mean, please do not misconstrue anything that I'm saying. Okay? Infertility is horrible and awful, and Rivka's experience, I don't wish upon anybody. But somebody who has hope that she's going to be getting pregnant one day might be reading different books, might be going on Google, you know, what's it like to be pregnant, things of that nature. And Rivka's reading, oh, it's a beautiful time, your hair, your skin, right? Everything that she's finding out about. And then, except that you're not going to like chicken, right? And things like that. So this is all the things that she's expecting. She gets to be pregnant, and this is insane, what she's experiencing. Because these, what's going on inside of her, and of course, she forgot to read the part of, you know, what to expect when you're expecting twins. Right, because most people didn't have twins. They, you know, most people have one. So the concept is not even, it hasn't even come into her head that she might be having twins. So she's going over to all the women and to all of her friends, and she's saying, "Hey, ladies, is what I'm experiencing normal? Because this doesn't, you know, this is not what I read in the handbook." V'omereslan, "Yigei lachem atzar hazeh? Have you guys ever experienced this kind of pain? B'imeichem in your days? Im kach hutzaro shalbanim halavai lo ivarti." If this is what it takes, I mean, thank God. I was never pregnant before. This is crazy. Rabbi Huna Amarim Kach Ani Asid Lahamid Shneim Asar Shavatim Alavai Lo Ibarti. Right? Rabbi Huna says that if this is what it takes for me to have 12, because that's what it takes to make a nation, we know that's what it takes to make a nation, because somebody else made a nation already. Yishmael made a nation. How many children did he have? 12. Who else had 12? Nachor. Well, Esav hasn't been born yet, so, okay, so we can't, okay, and Esav didn't have 12. Esav and Seir together have 12, okay, whatever that means. But again, the idea of having 12 means making a nation, and that's why we know that, you know, that Yaakov's wives were into getting that number, because of that concept that you create a nation out of 12. Yosef, by the way, wanted to bring Binyamin down, because Binyamin had 10, and Yosef had 2. That's how you make a nation. Okay, so let it be from the children of Rachel. Okay, so that's this idea. So she's saying, I need to have 12, but if this is what it takes to have one, again, she didn't know that she had 2 yet. If this is what it takes to have one, I don't really need this. And that's what it says, minyan ze. See that the word ze with an apostrophe? What's ze? Ze equals 12, because Zion is 7 and Hey is 5. 7 plus 5. She says, Lama ze anochi. What do I need ze for? Ze equals 12. That's crazy. I can't go through this 12 times. Or even if I need to go through it 6 times, I can't go through this 6 times to get 12, to have twins. Tani b'shem rechem neruya isa Rivka shiandu men yud be shvatim. Hauda amar vayomar Hashem lash negayim. That Rivka was supposed to have 12, or she was reuya, she was worthy of having 12. And that's what Hashem said there. Shnei goyim. You have 2 nations. What's 2? Da train. Shnei goyim equals 2. Ushnei le'umim, So in other words, what you have now is Shnei Goyim. And what else do you have the potential for? Shnei Le'umim. Mime Eichi Baredu. Harba, that's two more. Ula'om Mil'om Yamatz. In other words, that all of these things that she's hearing from Hashem, or for whoever Hashem's representative is, equals ways of showing that this is what's going to come out of you. La'om Mil'om is another two. Ula'om Mil'om Yamatz. I should have put that word Yamatz in bold also. Viravya Avod Sa'ir. That the older will serve the younger, that becomes Timnaya. You know what Timnaya means? Ishmona is eight. Vayimlu yameha leledes, her days filled to give birth, that's two more, that's ten. Vayetzei Arishon, one is Admoni, that's 11. Yachrechen Yatza Achiv, the brother is 12. And that would presume, by the way, that everything else, that if the Rishon and the Achiv refer to Yaakov and Esav, that those other numbers are referring to the potential of her womb. Okay, the main thing that she got out of this was that there are two inside of her. But that's the message that the Midrash is telling us. That she was saying, why do I need Zeh for? Zayin Shiva, Zayin equals 7, Hey equals Chamisha, equals 5, Hatrenasar, Minyan Zeh, that equals 12, which is Zeh. So Vatelech Lidroshes Es Hashem, that she goes to seek out God. Were there shuls and base medrashes in that time? She went to the base medrash of Shem Ve'Eber. Okay, that somebody who goes to seek out the elderly for advice is like somebody who seeks out the divine. Now, by the way, one of the questions which is asked is, why did she not go to Abraham? Why did she not ask her father-in-law? So maybe it could be that it's embarrassing, right? Not everybody wants to go to their father-in-law for advice of these kinds of things. But there is such a viewpoint that she was asking for that kind of answer, and she didn't go to Avraham because she wanted to go to the Zakenim. Right? Avraham was an old guy, but if Shem and Eva are still around, guess what? They're older. Okay, they're a lot older. They're a lot older, and so that's an important message. That if you seek out the elderly and the wise in that sense and the experienced, who can give that answer.
You also mentioned previously that Abraham, after Sarah died, he lost the Keter.
Right. So we saw that last time. Right. So there is that possibility. The Yalkut Shimoni, by the way, says. Re, I don't know who Re is. It's some rabbi, could be Yitzchak, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yonatan. I don't know who it is. But he says, "Esrim shana is Rivka akara lachar chav shana lakach es Rivka v'telach v'halach lo lahar Moriah." That after 20 years of infertility or being barren, Yitzchak took her to Har Moriah, l'makom shenakat sham, to the place where he had been bound. V'nispalel al harayon abeten v'netar lo kadosh baruch hu. That was Yitzchak's special place. So I said before that Rivka went and that she prayed. I believe I saw that view. But obviously the Yalkut Shimoni in recording this is saying that Yitzchak went there because the pasuk says Vayei Aser Lo Hashem, that God heeded his prayer. And so there you have it. Okay. And what I was just well, all I wanted to do with this class is to bring out different perspectives on understanding what Rivka was going through. We know the end of the story. We know that she had Yaakov and Esav inside. That Yaakov and Esav each had different matios, things which would possibly cause them to want to come out. And Rivka's pregnancy was just a very miserable experience. There is a midrashic view that when Esav was born in some way, and I don't understand this, but Esav ripped apart her womb. So that she could never have another child, okay? And that Yaakov was obviously there, and so he was able to emerge. But that you know, Rivka stopped at that point because she was incapable of having a child. Now, is anything beyond God? I'm not going to say that. But obviously, Rivka's experience was enough to make her. Perhaps it was enough to make her not want to have another child again. I don't know anything else, and I'm not going to presume anything. But what do we learn today, just to summarize? We learned that there are different possibilities as to how old Rivka was at the time that she got married, and therefore how old she was at the time that she had her children. If you follow the view that she was 3 when she got married, she was 23 when she had her kids, which is certainly not problematic. If you follow the view that she was 14 when she got married, and she was 34 when she had her children, not problematic. Based on the Sifrei, we saw that argument that Tosis raises is a little more compelling than the other approach. but not that the phrase word is law. And with respect to her pregnancy and everything else about her, we found a few nice choice details that the Midrash says about how special she was, both when she was still at her parents' house with the water coming up to her and when she came to the tent and took over Sarah's place, bringing those four things back after Sarah had died. And as a result, her pregnancy, one of the main, and I find also to be very compelling components of Rivka, is her connection with God. What does it mean? Does it mean God or does it mean a human being? But nevertheless, the fact that she can get answers in a way that, like, why doesn't she go to Yitzchak and say what's going on? Why doesn't she go to Avram and say what's going on? That she's seeking out, whether it's a zaken or whether she's an elderly person or whether she's seeking out God himself, that just goes to show how extremely special she was. And remember, maybe God did not hear her prayer to help her become pregnant, but if God's communicating with her during her pregnancy, even though she is the daughter of Bezuel and the sister of Lavan, it shows how extremely special she was, and I don't think that her status has ever been diminished through all this discussion, but it should only be elevated, and that's the way I think we should always view our avos and imahos as people who were real people who had struggles, but who were able to rise above those struggles and become the people who we continue to revere as our avos and imahos, as our forefathers and our foremothers.
Yeah.